produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. First up today, we've got news from Normal. Our news today. Hawaii legislature considers two marijuana decriminalization bills. Two bills have been introduced in the Hawaii state legislature that would move marijuana possession violations of less than 1 ounce from a petty misdemeanor to a civil violation. Senate Bill 1260 cites economic factors in seeking a change to the law. Quote, a recent study of the economics of enforcement of marijuana laws in Hawaii reveals that state and county enforcement agencies spend $4.1 million per year to enforce marijuana possession laws, and an additional $2.1 million is spent in the courts. Notwithstanding this expenditure, between 1994 and 2003, the price of 1 ounce of high-quality marijuana dropped by 12%, close quote. SB 1260 would mandate a civil penalty system for law enforcement to use in marijuana possession violations, whereby an officer would issue an on-the-spot ticket and fine. If changed, the bill's sponsors argue that Hawaii would save over $5 million per year in tax expenditures on marijuana possession offenses. A second bill, SB 1711, also seeks to decriminalize marijuana possession for those found with less than 1 ounce of marijuana. SB 1711 argues that even a petty misdemeanor violation is likely to have long-lasting negative consequences for the individual if they are prosecuted for marijuana possession in such a manner. If either bill is enacted, Hawaii would join 11 other U.S. states who have enforced marijuana possession offenses with non-criminal procedures and ticketing, much like traffic or parking violations. The states that have decriminalized minor marijuana possession are Alaska, California, Colorado, Maine, Minnesota, Mississippi, Nebraska, Nevada, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, and Oregon. Hawaii residents interested in the bills can read their full text and contact their state legislators through Normal's Take Action section of normal.org. And we have links today on our website at normalaudiostash.com. National Normal in Washington, D.C. has recently published in booklet form the groundbreaking report, Emerging Clinical Applications of Cannabis and Cannabinoids, a review of the scientific literature 2000 to 2006. The booklets will be delivered to elected officials, law enforcement, and policy analysts across the country to better educate Americans about the tremendous therapeutic value of cannabis and the most striking new scientific research into possible cannabinoid therapies. Joining us on the program today is the report's author, Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano. Paul, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Wonderful to have you on the program as always, Paul. We spoke about this report when it was first published last fall. Tell us about some of the most recent additions and updates.
Well, as people are well aware of who listen to this show, the science regarding the use of cannabis and cannabinoids for medical purposes really expands by leaps and bounds almost every day. So in the six-month period since we first issued the report, a number of new studies looking at the use of cannabinoids to treat various illnesses such as Lou Gehrig's disease, such as Alzheimer's disease, were published in the fall, and we updated the report to reflect much of this new science. We also added a foreword by one of the foremost researchers in this area, Dr. Greg Carter, out of the University of Washington School of Medicine. And he has now a quite lengthy foreword to this publication that I think is really a great addition to it.
And Paul, this week there was a fair amount of media buzz associated with Sanofi Aventis's Acomplia. That's a cannabinoid receptor blocker that's been touted for weight loss by the company. So how much of this new research is in the realm of the cannabinoid system as opposed to cannabis itself?
You know, there's a report that was published this past fall by the NIH that, like my report, was an overview of the emerging therapeutic applications for cannabis and cannabinoids. And interestingly enough, in the end of that report, they noted that there are now 27 medications pending that are based on cannabinoids. In other words, there are pharmaceutical companies that have under patent and are investigating 27 different types of drugs that are based on synthetic versions of cannabinoids. So, in fact, there is a lot of interest from Big Pharma in this area at the moment.
And when we talk about Big Pharma, so many of the diseases discussed in your report have such long-term and serious implications to individual health, but much of it can also spill over into politics when you talk about conditions associated with aging, like Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis, and the like. So it begs the question, Paul, how much can cannabis challenge Big Pharma if regular Americans were better versed in the therapeutic value of cannabis?
Well, it's amazing. If you simply take the indications that we highlight in this report and you apply them to the numbers of Americans who suffer from these diseases, alone we're talking about several millions of Americans that could benefit from cannabis to treat some of these clinical indications, and particularly when we're talking about many of these age-related disorders like Alzheimer's, like Lou Gehrig's disease, or some of these progressive disorders like multiple sclerosis, diseases people live with for many, many years. Clearly, the accepted use of marijuana could take a serious bite out of the profits of many big pharmaceutical medications.
And do you think that by presenting this information on these age-related conditions, that the science will find some resonance in the generations that were literally bombarded by the reefer madness rhetoric of government propaganda?
I think so. In fact, if you look at polling, older Americans, by and large, are supportive of the medical marijuana issue. Americans over age 50, even over age 60, still show majority support, like Americans of all ages, quite frankly, for the legal use of medical marijuana. But clearly, I do think that this is a demographic that the more they learn and understand this issue, the more they will realize that they themselves can benefit in improving potentially their quality of life through the use of cannabis-based therapeutics.
And Paul, do you hope that this report in booklet form will have some impact on the regulatory bodies, perhaps the FDA?
Well, Chris, I'm not hopeful the FDA is going to be looking at this issue anytime soon, but I am pleased to report that since we've had this report published in the 64-page booklet form, we've disseminated over 2,000 copies to a number of local organizations on the ground in states where medical marijuana legislation is pending. And in fact, right now, we have booklets in the hands of activists and legislators in every state where medical marijuana bills have been introduced, as well as in a half dozen states where medical marijuana bills will be introduced in the near future. And they have received a very positive response from lawmakers and from the folks on the ground in these states that are lobbying for statewide medical marijuana reform. We do have the intention later on to also get these booklets in the hands of members of Congress, but right now we are focusing on the states that have bills in their legislatures that would either legalize the use of marijuana for medical purposes or would expand existing statewide medical marijuana programs.
And having this information available, especially in print form, which politicians love to use still, this can really go a long way to help people understand the value of marijuana as medicine here.
Sure. Many legislators and many people overall are shocked to know. This report alone summarizes more than 140 published clinical or preclinical trials on the use of marijuana as a medicine that have been published in the last 5 or 6 years. There is an incredible amount of evidence now showing that marijuana holds positive medical value to treat a number of indications, many of which are indications that no currently approved pharmaceutical drugs can treat. And in many cases, as I like to stress, we're talking not just about symptomatic relief, but about the potential to alter the progression of progressive disorders that are debilitating and sometimes even fatal. There's nothing on the market, for instance, that can halt the progression of Lou Gehrig's disease, but at least in animal models, marijuana does so. There's very little on the market we can give people when they have certain types of malignant cancers to help get rid of those cancers other than chemotherapy or radiation. Yet there's evidence, once again, in animals that cannabis can get rid of cancerous tumors. So it's a very exciting time if you are someone on the research end of this.
Now, we've seen some hard science get completely politicized in America. It comes from global warming, stem cell research, even to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But marijuana as a medicine is really the starkest example of science falling prey to politics in America, it sounds like.
Chris, if we were talking about any drug other than marijuana, this drug would already be legally approved. So, yeah, there is no doubt that science in this realm is heavily politicized. Oftentimes, the research that does takes place overseas. Other times, the research that takes place in this country is simply not publicized to the extent it would otherwise be if we were talking about any other drug.
This report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids, relies on research published in the most respected of medical journal publications out there. So, is there perhaps a growing sense in the medical and medical research community that this is a very important topic? I mean, do these editors of those medical journals ever comment on all of this cannabis research?
You know, from time, journal editors will not just run the published study, but they'll also opine about it in the beginning of the journal, and you'll see that happen from time to time. In fact, in the coming weeks, we expect actually later in this month, there will be a very significant clinical trial published on the inhaled use of marijuana to treat pain in a prestigious American journal. And once again, you will see that journal opine about it, not just run the study. And we expect that will really raise the profile of this issue, at least temporarily, within the media and within even among potentially politicians in this country. Certainly, though, if not the journals, certain medical associations, the Society for Neuroscience comes to mind immediately. They are very aware of the science and in large part are proponents of the emerging scientific research that's taking place. There clearly are investigators in some medical societies that, regardless of the fact we're talking about marijuana, are very much behind this effort and taking it very seriously.
So it sounds like there's a real sense in the research community that perhaps the laws need to change here so that more research can be conducted, because as we've discussed here on the program, those researchers really face astounding hurdles to investigating cannabis at all.
There are clearly investigators who conduct the research that are very much aware and behind this sort of research taking place. Whether their knowledge base has yet extended to the general public of, say, physicians is another story. One would like to think that physicians keep up with reading all the medical journals, but, you know, just like you and I, they have busy lives and busy schedules, and for the most part, they don't. So in many cases, there's a learning curve. And right now you have mostly the investigators doing the research on the top half of this curve, and you have, you know, your general practitioner, your ordinary physician, somewhere near the bottom of it. And oftentimes you have the public somewhere in the middle.
And Paul, having pored over all this data and compiled and now revised this report, what are some of the things that stuck out for you as having the most immediate and profound impact?
Three things come to mind immediately. One is the potential anti-cancer properties of cannabinoids. The fact that in a number of different cancerous cell lines, whether you're talking about skin cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer, a whole host of different cancers, cannabinoids seem to kill those sort of cancer cells in a very effective manner. That's the first thing that jumps out at you when you read this publication. The other is when you look at two families of diseases, either neurodegenerative disorders like, once again, Lou Gehrig's disease or Alzheimer's disease, or when you look at the family of autoimmune disorders like multiple sclerosis, like rheumatoid arthritis, how well in preliminary studies cannabinoids seem to not only provide symptomatic relief but actually halt the progression of those two types of diseases. And you can run down the list of specific diseases that fit in those overall families of diseases, and you will see that marijuana, at least at the preliminary level, seems to be more effective in many cases than the standard drugs that are already available on the market.
Again, National Normal has recently published in booklet form the groundbreaking report, Emerging Clinical Applications of Cannabis and Cannabinoids, a review of the scientific literature, 2000 to 2006. The booklets will be delivered to elected officials, law enforcement, and policy analysts around the country to better educate Americans about the tremendous therapeutic value of cannabis and the most striking new research into possible cannabinoid therapies. Paul Armentano is the author of the report. Paul, thanks again for joining us here today.
Thank you, Chris.
We have links to read the report online at normalaudiostash.com. If you would like copies of the booklet or to ask Paul any questions, please contact Normal via phone at area code 202-483-5500. Again, that's 202-483-5500. Or email foundation@normal.org.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Medical marijuana laws and decriminalization legislation is before over a dozen state governing bodies this winter. Because of the legislative process that dictates the route a bill must take, many of these good laws end up stalled in legislative subcommittees. But those stalled bills have a chance to get out of those committees and before our elected officials for a vote. In a special Take Action focus today, we're going to hear about New Jersey's medical marijuana bill, SB 88. We'll speak with the director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey and also hear informational testimony given before New Jersey's state elected officials this summer on the bill. Ken Wolski is a registered nurse and director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey. Ken, thanks for joining us here on the Audio Stash again today.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Wonderful to have you back on the program, Ken. We spoke last June when there was this rather high-profile testimony given by members of your Coalition for Medical Marijuana, as well as other patients, including Montel Williams.
Yes, those hearings in June were very successful, but they were only informational hearings, so there was no actual voting on the Senate bill S-88, the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act. So Dr. John Morgan came down from New York, and Sharon Rayner from the New Jersey State Nurses Association. Senator Scutari, the sponsor of the bill, spoke very passionately in favor of it. Of course, Montel Williams gave very compelling testimony. And two of our members from the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey, Don and Jerry McGrath, spoke about their son who used marijuana before he died of cancer on the recommendations of his physician. So those hearings went well, as I said, but there were no there was no voting on the hearings. So this is what we're hoping to get. We have this bill, the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act, and it's in the Senate Health Committee, and we have a companion bill that was sponsored, has three co-sponsors in the Assembly, an identical bill in the Assembly Health Committee. So basically we're urging that this bill come up for a vote, because, you know, we think we have the votes to pass this bill into law. And the governor, Governor John Corzine here in New Jersey, said that he would sign the bill if we can get it to his desk. But we just can't get the bill, you know, out of committee and up for a hearing. The legislature has been consistently saying that they're tied up with property tax issues here in New Jersey. And actually, I spoke with a legislative aide who said that he didn't think it was going to come up for a hearing even in 2007.
And is New Jersey in a unique position here, Ken, because so much of the large pharmaceutical companies are based in northern New Jersey, just outside New York, that if marijuana is recognized as a medicine in New Jersey, that it could have real national impact?
Well, it certainly would, yes. This is my argument to the AARP and some other national organizations. The AARP says that they're consistently trying to bring down prices for expensive pharmaceutical drugs for senior citizens and others on fixed incomes. And yet here we have a safe and effective and inexpensive, virtually free medication that you could grow yourself, and it would take away the need for both Medicaid payments and Medicare payments and private payments to for very expensive prescription drugs and sometimes dangerous prescription drugs. So, how much the pharmaceutical industry is actually opposed to this, it's hard to say because, it's things that are done, through funding of other organizations.
Ken, let's also go over SB 88. Hopefully it will get out of committee this year. How would it work if it were enacted into law?
SB 88 would remove the statewide criminal penalties in New Jersey for possession, use, and cultivation of a small amount of marijuana when it's recommended by a physician. It would establish a program in the New Jersey Department of Health that would issue an ID card to a patient or a caregiver to allow him or her to possess 6 plants and up to 1 ounce of usable marijuana. So it's much like the programs in the other states that don't have dispensaries. There would be no dispensaries in New Jersey. It would just allow for private use, that is to say, use in public, use in on buses, and use while you're driving cars, would still be illegal. It would remove the criminal penalties for private use when recommended by a physician.
And for New Jersey residents who wish to see SB 88 get out of that committee, how can they get involved?
Well, we recommend that you go to www.njleg, that's njleg.state.nj.us, and that's the legislative website. And at the legislative website, there's a wealth of information, Chris. And on the left-hand side of that, you see the committees. And if you go to the Senate Health Committee and the Assembly Health Committee, you will find that you can just click on the names and of the Assembly Health Committee members and the Senate Health Committee members, and you can send them emails. You will get their get a picture of the committee members. You'll get their email address. You'll get their telephone number. And we'd like we're suggesting that New Jersey residents call these committee members and urge that this bill S88 and A933. Be released from committee and be put up for a vote. And we want to know, what the objections are from the legislators exactly. End the speculation. Put it up for a vote. See who's for it and who's against it. We think we have the votes to pass it. If needle exchange passed in New Jersey, needle exchange is far more controversial, and it took 13 years to pass a needle exchange bill. Medical marijuana is much less controversial, but has far greater support throughout the state. In the assembly, we have two men who are co-sponsors of this bill. One is Michael Patrick Carroll. He's a Republican, and he's described as being righter than right. And the other one is Reed Gucciora, and he's a Democrat, and he's described as being lefter than left. So, we have bipartisan support in the assembly for this bill. And we'd like to know who is objecting to it. What is the problem with it? So we're urging New Jersey residents to contact the health committee members in both the Senate and the Assembly and urge them to put this up for a vote and to to pass it out of committee.
Ken Wilski is a registered nurse and the director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey. Ken, thank you so much again for taking time to join us here today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Chris. Anytime.
We have links to the New Jersey legislature and the subcommittee where SB 88 is currently residing. Ken also mentioned that opponents to the bill have asked out-of-state opponents to contact New Jersey legislators and mentioned that if there are those who are listening who are not necessarily New Jersey residents who support SB 88, could also call the New Jersey state elected officials to help move this bill out of committee. Again, we have links to the New Jersey Coalition, the New Jersey Legislature, at normalaudiostash.com. Let's listen now to some of that informational testimony. This is Jerry and Don McGrath of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry McGrath, and I've been a practicing registered nurse since 1964. I've been married for 40 years, and I'm the mother of three sons. When our youngest son, Sean, was diagnosed with inoperable cholangiocarcinoma in May of 2002, it sent Sean and his family on a journey that I could never imagine. To watch your child go through such unthinkable suffering was a parent's worst nightmare. We were fortunate to have some of the country's best doctors and nurses at a leading medical center to treat him. They exhausted every available medication to reduce his unrelenting pain and nausea. Watching his weight drop to 97 pounds, I didn't think Sean would have the strength to withstand the powerful chemo regimen that might save him. Sean wanted desperately to live. In medical terms, he was in a state of cachexia, a medical condition caused by the cancer that makes the body waste away. He was unable to consume enough calories to prevent this, and literally the body wastes away until you die. With each passing day, his body and spirit was weakened to a point of almost no return. One day, his doctors suggested he try marijuana, off the record, of course. When he was able to have a friend bring some to him, it was remarkable. For the first time since he was diagnosed, Sean had a smile on his face. He was able to eat something that didn't come out of a tube. His spirit and ours soared. We knew marijuana wasn't going to cure his cancer, but it would make him feel well enough to eat and gain back some of the weight and strength for the battle ahead. It never made him high, but it enabled him to tolerate the pain and keep down the other legal medications he needed. As an RN and a mother and a caregiver, I saw firsthand how marijuana helped my son. Besides having to fight this terrible disease, he had to struggle to fight the stigma of using an illegal drug to help him. He hated feeling like a criminal and putting his family in jeopardy when all he wanted to do was relieve his suffering and feel normal, to be able to eat and to survive. Today, doctors who want to help their patients cannot recommend marijuana except off the record, as in our son's case. I know many doctors who care for their patients would come forward, but are fearful of the illegal stigma that's attached to this drug, and the wrath of the individuals with their own agendas would want nothing better than to put them in jail. This should not be a political or legal issue. Let doctors, nurses, and families take care of their sick and dying without the fear of police crashing down their doors and arresting them. I ask you to decriminalize medical marijuana. Please allow doctors to recommend this medication on the record when they know it will help their patients. They shouldn't be intimidated by a few individuals who, without any expertise of caring for the sick and dying, have decided that marijuana has no medical value and would rather lock them up and take away their livelihoods and homes. If Sean had survived, he would have wanted to be here to testify for all those who desperately need marijuana as they face similar journeys as Sean had to travel. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Don McGrath, and we're residents of Mercer County. A little bit about Sean. He was, at the time he was diagnosed, he was 26 years old, a Rutgers graduate, a musician, a vegan, that's someone who he neither ate nor used any animal products. He didn't smoke, drink, or use drugs, and he was engaged to be married. As my wife indicated, to keep him alive, he had some major surgery to modify his digestive system, and he was given very aggressive chemotherapy for up to 9 hours each Monday for the rest of his life, as it turned out. Not once did he go into remission. With the chemo, the surgery, and the cancer itself, Sean was in constant pain, and if he was awake, he was extremely nauseous. His team of doctors, again, recommended or tried every possible drug that was available at the time, and that included Marinol, the synthetic version of marijuana, but none was effective. None was particularly effective. Again, once he tried marijuana, they then recommended off the record that he try marijuana. Once they did, it worked, and it worked immediately. And I can say that without the marijuana, the last year of his, yes, last 19 months of his life wouldn't have been possible. Unfortunately, cancer went out in 2004. As a parent and a caregiver for Sean, I didn't need several years of clinical studies or FDA approval to determine that marijuana was effective. We relied instead on the recommendations of medical specialists who were treating him, and we saw very clearly that it worked, and it was working. Can anyone explain why the one medicine that was the most effective, least toxic, and had the lowest cost for my son was illegal for him to use, while less effective, highly toxic, and very, very expensive drugs were perfectly acceptable? I would hope that no one here ever has to go through such an experience. But for the many unluckier people living in New Jersey that are going through it right now, I would ask that you do what you know in your hearts is right. Sean didn't choose to have cancer, but luck wasn't with him. He didn't choose to use marijuana, but he absolutely, undeniably needed it to reduce the suffering and just to stay alive. Sean didn't choose to die, but there wasn't a cure for his illness. Sean and all the other people like him in New Jersey that are living and suffering and dying every day should not be criminals for the things they simply don't choose. Thank you.
Both of your testimony, we're sorry for your loss and your courage to come out this afternoon and to tell your story and to on behalf of Scott. So thank you very much.
That was Jerry and Don McGrath, members of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey, speaking in June of 2006. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting Technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.